Okay.
And welcome back. Glad you're along tonight. Over all these years of interviewing a lot of people, speaking, conversational sessions with a lot of people, I've learned a great deal. And I've been blessed to have met a lot of extraordinary people. Some just almost phenomenal, science fiction types. But they're real. And I have collated a lot of data, and you longtime listeners have learned right along with me. Fascinating. One of the most interesting people I have ever had the honor to meet over the airwaves and know is John Lennard Walson. L-E-N-A-R-D, Lennard, like Leonard, but it's Lennard. John Lennard Walson, W-A-L-S-O-N. For you long-term listeners, you'll remember that many years ago, John was on a lot. He sent me some pictures that he said he had taken with, I think it was an 8-inch telescope that he had jury-rigged with an HD video camcorder of some kind. He was able to get videos of the moon that almost looked like he was down on the surface. It was extraordinary. But more than that, he was able to photograph and reproduce on his site, and he sent a lot to me, videos and still frames of large spaceships, space machines, space objects parked in Earth orbit up above us that nobody talks about. He was able to go up. He used to go up on a hill in England with a chair and his tripod and his augmented telescope with a friend usually, and he would spend hours recording what he was seeing and capturing on his video camera hooked to his telescope that was in orbit above our heads around this planet. These are not satellites. These are as big as a 737. These are big items, machines, lots of them. We have a secret space program. And at one point, I took about maybe a dozen pictures and sent them to Bill Tompkins, who at age 91 or 92 was without question the most well-informed, original in the whole field of advanced propulsion, advanced technology that I've ever known. And Bill Tompkins spent over 53 hours on this program. And I bet you John Walson spent at least half that much. We had him on a lot. And I showed the pictures to Bill Tompkins, and he said, "Where'd you get these?" I said, "The man who took them sent them to me." He said, "These are real. How did he do it?" So that's instant endorsement of John's work. The John Walson story is a big story, and it's all in the archives if you want to go back and listen to it. Fascinating. Now, some time ago, not many months ago, John Walson somehow got into contact with another friend of mine, John Wilkie. John Wilkie, in the 90s and early 2000s, was very much into the UFO reporting, researching field, did a lot of remarkable work, was a guest on the program back then too, not as many times as John Walson, but a lot. At any rate, the two of them got together, and John Wilkie helped John Walson put a book together. And that book is available. Look in Guests, look under John Wilkie's name, and you'll see a link to it. It's on Amazon. I can't wait to get my copy. And we're going to talk about some things that are extraordinary. Tomorrow night, John Walson will be back on the program. So this is kind of a prelude. We're going to set the stage for John's return tomorrow night. He's a very humble and very kind and utterly brilliant individual who shared so many things with us on this program that I never had a doubt from the very first moment I talked to him that he was an honorable, honest man. Never. And it's turned out to be exactly that. So with all that said, let's welcome John Wilkie back to the program. It's been a long time. Hello, John. Thanks for being there.
Hi, Jeff. I'm really excited to be back. Listen, I want to throw a date at you, see if you can tell me what this is, all right? January 8th, 1997.
Was that the first time John was on this program?
That was the first time I was on your program.
You were on. I knew it was one of you. All right. Yeah. Well, you go back. It's 27 years. That's amazing.
And I'm as excited this time as I was before because my real intent to come and talk to you tonight is I am almost dumbfounded why America or the whole world does not know about John Leonard Walson.
It's a mystery to me. It was back then, and it still is now. I concur.
And I also, besides the man's work, I do relatively gauge the legitimacy, like vetting someone through the people that know him, you know, that are excited about him. And if I started, we might end this conversation, but if I started just dropping some of the names of people that have contacted him and requested him to come to their home or their place, initially it brings up, skepticism even in me.
John is at home in the most advanced firmament of human technology and advancement. Things that are hidden from us that will never be released to the public. They just won't. John is there. He's been there. Just to give you a brief example, and we'll talk to John about this more tomorrow night, but John Walson was summoned to meet with the Queen at one point, and they exchanged letters after that. She wanted to know how he was doing what he was doing. The Hidden Space Program was a capital H Hidden Space Program. And here it is, John Walson, showing pictures of it. Go ahead.
You know, back in the days, I had my 15 minutes of fame as a UFO researcher. I did the television shows and the magazines, but I found that it was normally me, you know, really knocking on their door, you know, and finally they just, I guess they just caved in and invited me on. And I really got a lot of attention. And then, you know, the Phoenix Lights incident came up, and that just was the biggest thing that ever happened. But
well, you were knee deep in that too from the beginning. So,
well, I had found that my premise at the time was that there are things hidden above us in the light. People didn't quite understand what I meant by that, but I had a lot of success over L.A. in the late 90s. I don't want to go off into the weeds. It does tie into John Leonard Walson that I was so freaked out by what I was seeing, what was happening to me, that I couldn't sleep at night.
Right. John, were you the one, and I can't remember now. It's been too many years. Too many things have happened. There was a, and I drove down, I don't think it was you, but I drove to L.A. when someone started emailing me saying, I got this broad daylight picture of it, looked like a hat, like a, kind of like a top hat, but not as tall as a top hat, a UFO in broad daylight overflying Canoga Park in that area. That's where the video was taken. Somebody was using the edge of a roof. They were putting a camera up on a tripod, aiming it up into the blue sky, but the roof overhang of the house was blocking out the sun from frying the digital equipment in the camera. And in the blue sky, the person would turn the camera on for 3-4 hours and then go back and look at it at fast motion, triple speed, 4x speed, and see things flying through the air that people don't notice. Bright sun, they don't look up, these things are too fast. That wasn't you, but you may have seen those things back in the day.
No, actually, that another version, but that was me, Jeff. Yes, I.
Very good. I remembered right then. Okay, good.
The book, the story was called Solar Obliteration. It was a name that a producer of the, well, you might recognize this, the producer of the then television series called Sightings.
Yes,
they had come out. They had some. You know, some interviews with me. I went down, I took my materials, and the first thing that I did was a magazine article. I think Mr. Tim Beckley or
Timothy Beckley. Anyway,
yes, I think we've lost him now, but I had, it's a long story. It would be an hour for me to just explain that one, but the first time I put the camera up, something went through the frame, and I thought, well, it's an insect, but it went so fast. Excuse me. It went so fast that I went through the video frame by frame, and in one of the frames there was a stereotypical, almost like out of a Bugs Bunny cartoon, Marvin the Martian flying saucer. I mean, it couldn't get more stereotypical than that. And it's up online, and I have the book, finally. You interviewed me for that a couple of years ago. But that was at the same day. I don't want to go off in the weeds here. We could go on and on. I appreciate you remembering that. In the same frame, there was one thing that went by slowly that looked an awful lot like a submarine. And it moved from side to side, and there's probably 10, but it was kind of in a mist. It looked like it was impacting, you know, our atmosphere. And back then, I think the camera that I had was some little Sony. I borrowed it. Remember Martha Brimer? Remember me telling you this sweet old lady in Tennessee?
Yes, I do remember that name.
And one day she says, you know, Joan, in her Arkansas accent, she's going to buy a camera, and she wanted me to go out and film UFOs with her. And in tongue-in-cheek,
I remember this
said,
story now. It's funny. I remember this,
And you actually came out to her house with Peggy. They were
That's who I went to see. It was Martha's house.
Yes, with
and
Peggy,
I looked at the videos.
And they were there in Van Nuys. And you just said,
man,
I asked you, what do you think that is? And, well, yeah, there's a lot of history, so much, right? But, I mean,
that's
that turned
amazing.
Into this. By the time, you know, I kind of, when she said she wanted me to help her, I kind of had tongue-in-cheek. I said, well, okay, you know. By the time we were done, we had done just that and got on television shows and radio programs that ran around the world. You know, I think by the year 2000, something like 500 million people had been exposed to it, had seen this material. Now, 1% of 1% of that might have tried it or believed it, but my greatest reinforcement was other people. You know,
well,
let
me just tell everyone, I'll never forget that, and I couldn't remember until just now that it was John's work. Brilliantly intelligent way to go about this. Broad daylight, blue skies before chemtrails were so heavy, over L.A., and you just put the camera upward, you know, 90 degrees up almost, and the roof, overhanging roof from the house, protected the electronics and the camera from being fried. And John was able to film and film and record and record, and he found these things. And I'll never forget when I saw it. That particular hat, I call it a hat shaped UFO, was only available 30 frames a second in video. Only I think it was only on 3 frames. It was moving that quickly, upper right, center, and lower left as it went by right to left. Am I remembering right?
Absolutely, sir. And, you know, I actually had it analyzed, and, you know, these are approximations, and this does tie into John Leonard Walson, so bear with me, okay? But that was like the high tech of the day, and 3 frames, and they have fields in between, you know, in the technical part of, I think that was back in VHS days. Digital was not even available yet.
No.
The premise of, you know, the overhang was not so much to protect the camera and the eyes, and which it was, first of all. I wanted to look next to the sun, but not right at it. At the time, I thought that was, they were hiding there. Years later, I think it was just like we were putting a lens on it and things kind of happened through there. But there was so much of it, okay? But 3 frames, I think, indicated its speed, and through their calculations, they could tell me the distance, all right? And I think it came to, like, they thought it was about 3.5 miles away. They thought it was about the size of a Volkswagen, in excess of 12,000 miles per hour.
Yeah, I'd like all of you to keep in mind that this, I lived about an hour and a half away from this location, and I knew I had to go down there, and I drove down and got to see this. And nobody was doing this kind of work then. This is, John was really breaking all new ground, and what he captured was stunning. It proved hiding in the light, they're up there in the daylight. You can't see them. You don't look up. You can't stare in the sun. It's too damn bright, and they're too damn fast. And that was back in the day. Go ahead.
So blocking out the direct sunlight was the real trick to it. So, you know, from your eyes and from the frame, so we were getting the photons kind of spread to the side, which had this revealing quality to it, almost like when you put on a pair of, you know, Ray-Ban sunglasses, this right. overly bright sky suddenly turns blue. And it's the same thing. It's the direct photons are being deflected, okay? Now, back then, if you remember, Jeff, we did not yet have consumer-grade HD. We did not have digital yet. Yeah. And we did not have IR or ultraviolet capabilities in 1995. Now, I don't know if I told you this story during the same period of time, as I think there's an aspect of this that, you know, if you open a window into another place, into another dimension, there's a real danger that what is on the other side of that window is going to feel a draft. And I do believe as I saw it, it saw me, you know, and things came very close. They literally came into my home with other people seeing it that were not even believers of this.
Got it.
So it actually, I got attacked a few times by things. It would be a two-hour show talking about that again, but that's not why we're here. So one night, I was so scared I couldn't sleep at night anymore. I'm hanging out the second-story window. Back then, I was a cigarette smoker, and the sun was just coming up. And coming down from my point of view, looking to the west, it would have been over like Reseda Boulevard or something, if you know that area.
Yes.
I saw it first as the sun was coming up. I saw it looked like a mirage coming off of a hot pavement in the middle on the freeway somewhere in the middle of the desert. There was this haze to it. And what I saw looked like a battleship. And it was kind of, you know, hazy, but it came closer and closer. And as it was coming over my location, I got a pretty good look at it, that right under the deck of this thing, there was these large vents. And they were blowing out what at first looked like steam. But as this steam accumulated, it kind of fell down and it kind of concealed the hull of this thing. And it was the size of the Ticonderoga. You know, it was like, it could literally land in the water and float around, and you would just think it was a battleship. And that was my first introduction to that. So things were hiding in the light, and that was the whole premise. And I really got to the point. I was just sharing with people that want information. I got past the skeptics and the people that scoff. I just, at some point, you can't even take that on anymore, right? So I had proven back then that the light was a powerful thing. And coming back to John Leonard Walson, you know, I had talked to you recently. You asked me if he was still doing his thing. Now, he has got a special piece of equipment that is a combination of infrared, ultraviolet, and full spectrum. And this guy doesn't even have to zoom in anymore. He could pass his camera to the person next to him, tell the point up in the sky, and within 30 seconds. I mean, he does not miss, ever. But, so I didn't mean to go off into the weeds there, but this is...
No, that's fine. Let me do this.
You go ahead.
No. What I want to do is play, if you look under John Wilkie's name, you'll see there's a videotape about John Walson's work. It's only a minute long. It's narrated by Gary McKinnon. And Gary McKinnon was quite a name for quite a while. You want to give us 30, 40 seconds on Gary McKinnon, then I'm going to play this little video. And you all can look at it as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Gary McKinnon wrote the foreword to the book that John Wilkie and John Walson have created of John Walson's work.
And Gary McKinnon and John Walson know each other very well. They are good friends. And both of them, I don't know what I expected, but some of the most caring, accessible, genuine people I've ever met in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the audience is looking at that now or I should be talking.
No, I'm going to play it. I'm going to play it right now. So listen to the sound here. And this is Gary McKinnon narrating this 1 minute video about John Walson's work.
These images were recently, well, today, sent to me by my pal John Leonard Walson. I'll put a link to his channel in the description. He has a ridiculously high-powered, gigantic telescope, so big that he has to make it mobile on a van. And these things look like stars, apparently, until he zooms in. And, well, you can see for yourself, they're absolutely incredible. Very good structural detail, considering atmospheric limits with magnification through a telescope. So, enjoy.
And it goes on from there to show you more of the little video clips that are put together. John Walson has been doing this for a long time, and this is real. And the more you look at these images, if you look under John Wilkie's name and guests, you'll see images. You can click on that as well, and we'll talk about those in a minute. But the more you look at these items that are up there and in Earth orbit, not low orbit, they're up there in middle of the high orbit, you see more detail the more you look. These are synthetic, okay? They're not natural, somehow created by the solar system. They're not big rocks. These are machines. It's obvious what they are. It doesn't take anybody with any particular intelligence to say that is an intelligently designed machine. And they're big. And no, they're not satellites. These are anything but satellites. These are big devices. We have had a secret space program here for a long time. And the whole space shuttle program with the tragic loss of life and all that, it was a canard. It was to keep people looking the other way, thinking that was the best we could do. No, not true at all. All right, when you first saw John Walson's images, what did you think? What was your first take? Now, you're already in the field, so I get the idea that it wouldn't be a terrible shock to you, but like it was to me, it was stunning. But what did you think?
Well, actually, Jeff, the first time I saw Mr. Walson's video, I want to say approximately 12, 15 years ago. It might have been around 2007, 2008. And I had an image of some, you know, English chap out in the middle of some secret, you know, field outside of Stonehenge, you know, a secret location with this special equipment. And I knew within about 30 seconds that what I was looking at was legitimate. I have a very extensive background. I'm ex-military, airframe, power plant. And I immediately recognized this was configurations of human design. You know, and as I was watching, I also noticed there were little specks, but there was things, you know, like little shuttles or whatever landing on it and taking off. And so many times I've listened to shows, you and other shows that he was on, and these are machines, but what are they? And, well, we don't know.
Right.
And
right.
But I have a lot of background, and honestly, and it is within the book, Fast, Far Above in Space and Time, we do divulge what they are. We know the different configurations. We know their purpose. We know their distance approximately. These are approximations, but I want to say conservatively 90%. My real belief is about 96, 97% accurate. But I mean, I saw it in about 2007. I was just floored. My feeling was, well, that's it. You know, that's mm-hmm. the proof. Mm-hmm. The game over. And then it kind of, I don't remember. I went on to other things. It kind of went away in my memory. The only way I could backtrack was to, you know, I saw that he was on your show. And I kept seeing the fast stuff. Now, it wasn't just these nighttime videos of these space, you know, Bill Tompkin-type designs. I would also see, like, well, here's the latest UFO video going around the internet, broad daylight at an air show, or, mm-hmm. you know, over mm-hmm. Malta. And I didn't realize it, but it was always the same guy. The most stunning pictures, day and night, nearby, up close, far away, were coming from the same character. The first reaction that many people have, well, when it's always the same person, there's your sign. You know, there must be something wrong here.
All right, two things. Yeah, let me explain this to everyone listening. When you look at these images, they're a little bit blurry and fuzzy, and you might say, well, why is that? Well, the answer is, I think many of you can figure it out. You can't magnify to exact certainty in terms of visual imagery through an atmosphere. It's astonishing that John gets the resolution he does. When you try to image something through the air, the atmosphere, the moisture in it, the particulates in it, and all the rest of it, becomes difficult. But these are truly astonishing achievements. And if you pull those pictures up right now, images, look for images under John Wilkie. And let's look at the first one. Just take a look at that. That is not a satellite. It's a large machine. It's parked up there. It was probably assembled up there. Maybe it was assembled here and then sent aloft. I don't know, with some advanced tech. It might have been. But these are machines. And the more you look, the more you see the intricate structural detail in these things. It's stunning. Go ahead, John.
Jeff, do you remember they used to have these puzzles, and it just looked kind of like dots? When you held them in front of your face and you focused and you pulled them away, at some point, some people could see, all of a sudden the image would appear and other people never saw it. And I have a lot of people that look at these pictures and tell me these are blurry, it could be anything.
Oh, please.
On the other hand, I saw it immediately. Now, if a civilization, no matter what part of the universe they came from, all of a sudden had the technology to orbit their planet, okay, they wouldn't start... you know, physics and science and engineering from scratch. They would take their existing, you know, history, what they had learned through millennia, and just retrofit it and put it up in place. And I immediately noticed so much parallels, correlations between things that are used on Earth and what we're showing up in the John Leonard Walson videos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. William Tompkins had said that a lot of it came from like a submarine type of...
Well, that was one of Bill's first designs for spacecraft. He said, why don't we just take a submarine and use that basic structure and make that into what we need? And that was one of Bill's first... We used to call them cigars back then, cigar-shaped UFOs. We still do. But that was probably something that was, I think, directly attributable to Bill Tompkins. And when I sent Bill these pictures, I will never forget his voice. He said, where did you get these? And I told him, and he said, they're all real. He couldn't believe it. He was stunned that somebody on Earth could do this with a telescope.
I also wanted to interject, you know, if you're in outer space, there's no necessity for aerolons or, you know, special wings.
No aerodynamic structures needed. None.
So if all of a sudden you find, like I saw this, it looked like a submarine, and I would take some of John Walson's pictures, okay, and I have this old trick I learned back in the early days with what I was doing, if they were blurry, mm-hmm. I would blow them up to like 1,200%. And I would go with my, you know, my little line tools on Corel Draw or, you know, Adobe's or whatever, right? And I would just take the blurry lines, and just for the fun of it, I would make it a straight line. And I'd look inside the pictures, and I'd find regular geometry. And while you're doing it, you don't know what it is. You're hoping you're accurate. And then I would shrink the picture down, and I'd see detail. And then I take my time with it. You might take 20, 30 hours with one picture. I think I sent you some of them, but I'd walk across the room and see what would occur to me and come back to it later. So I find these things that absolutely are the size of an Ohio-class submarine. It looks like it was made by General Dynamics, okay? And they would have these massive tails that had this really heavy-duty swivel mechanism so they could fold down and extend and articulate. And it was like a wrist and an elbow. And like, why in the world would you need that in space? On the other hand, if you had anti-gravity technology, why mm-hmm. wouldn't you land this thing in the middle of the ocean? You know, and if they have, you know, underwater bases, you know, off of the coast of Malibu. So sure. Now, you know, you could go high speed with that articulating tail underwater. It would be what we call a MEV, a multi-environmental vehicle. So this thing basically is very possibly what a lot of people refer to as the USOs, who most brought to my attention by a fellow named Preston Dennett, you know, Preston and Dolly. I'm sure you've had them on your show,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes, yes. I have. They're Preston's on once a month, in fact, yeah.
Yeah, they're friends of mine. I've known Preston before. He was the first person I ever took solar obliteration to, you know, 35 years ago. But my point is, you know, there's no art to this. It's pure function. You know what I mean?
Got it.
And so that was just the first one I did for him, and I sent it back to him, and all of a sudden we had an answer. What is this? You know, he had these things all these years, and he didn't know really what they were, and I was able to show him. Now, we got a minute, I can tell you a quick story. I think it was only about April of this year, purely by accident, allegedly, I get a friend request on Facebook from John Leonard Walson. My first reaction was, this guy wouldn't be writing me. This is some kind of, you know, a faux account or something like that. This guy is way too important. To me, John Leonard Walson may literally be, at least to me, this is a historical figure. And because, you know, when you look through all his information, he has over 10,000 hours of videos, Jeff. Every picture that you can see of John Leonard Walson's is not a photograph he took. It is a video. That means there's 10,000 frames and every angle and direction. I mean, you can really make comparisons, all right? And there was one, I'm jumping all the way around, but he had one video where as he was focusing on whatever craft these are, the space station flew through the same frame. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can make comparisons. Now there's something in, light physics called the red shift. And when something is lower on the horizon, the light is not as direct. It has to work a little harder, so it goes more into the red hue. When the light is more direct, straight up in the sky, it would be more brilliantly white. But if you knew the physics, the specifics of the lens, the magnification of the telescope, and then the camera that he's using, now you can start to have real approximations of distance. And when we compared, when I showed it to John, he didn't really know. I figured this out through research and working on it, that approximately the third of the way past the space station And all this information is in the book. It's really broken down. I don't want to give away all the punchlines and everything.
I really want to see the book. I can't wait.
We can give you a pretty good idea how big this thing is, mm-hmm. how far away it is. And a lot of it is really exotic equipment doing mundane tasks. And then at some point we even could approximate, you know, they're not going to be putting jet fuel or rocket fuel up in space and then having to chase oxygen tanks and everything. That does not make sense. It's too volatile. And they're also not supporting this special secret space program through going back and forth on a shuttle. So there's several conclusions you can come to, you know. On the Mars lander, they use something called hydrazine. And a very simple process. It's a peroxide and ammonia mixed together under pressure and heat. And then, if you can believe it, they mix elements that you could, like shavings of the end of a spark plug. Aluminum oxide. Or what's that other? Iridium gases. And so you have these monopropellants. They're pretty inert by themselves, but when you mix them together, the catalyst, then it becomes a propulsion that's very highly reactive, very powerful, and does not require any oxidization. You know, you don't have to have oxygen. You don't have to have fire. And this is all separate. This is just for the smaller vehicles because, you know, if one of these things are out there, Jeff, there's no way it's alone. And then you take into consideration Mr. Tompkins saying they were designing these things in the 50s and the 60s.
Right.
That implies that, you know, these guys have been up here longer than I've been alive.
Correct. Yes.
And
when you mentioned hydrazine, it's very interesting. Because the Messerschmitt 163, the rocket interceptor in World War II, used hydrazine hydrate in methanol plus concentrated hydrogen peroxide. That was their fuel. A8, T-stoff and B-stoff or something like that. And they mixed them together, and it would talk about volatility. It would thrust that little rocket plane straight up into the bomber formations, and very dangerous to mix that fuel. Was highly volatile. Many pilots were burned to death, and brave men that they flew that rocket plane, and they were successful.
But because of the rapid oxidation, am I saying it correctly? Sorry, I'm not a chemist, but I have done a lot of research.
Oxidation, you got it.
And basically, which is just combustion, right? But in space, you can't take that chance. And I think the bigger stuff has a very powerful component of anti-gravity. Now, we talk about when we go into outer space, we have this weightlessness, right? But that's a bit of a misnomer. You know, if you were put as an individual or even a space capsule above the Earth if you can completely stop it in its place, it would be pulled back down to Earth.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Gravity is still going to pull you down, but the parabola, having the correct speed, if you're inside that that capsule, you will float around, but that object is always being acted upon by a reduced level of gravity, you know what I mean? So there's a lot of physics and science interacting here, and such an adventure. But I want to get back to, by accident, around a little bit past April, I'm contacted by John Walson. I didn't believe it was him, but we started having conversations, and within about an hour, he told me the same thing. I felt like I knew this guy forever. I didn't question anything he said, and he was very keen. You know, he's so open to anyone that wants to talk to him. Right. And he would just send me all these videos and all these pictures, but know, his strength, his talent is, you know, he invented the Walson device is what I call it. And it's an entire system. We'll get into that in a moment. And I realized that John really needed somebody or something to collate his material, because I went through it myself before my book came out. I had to keep re-throwing this out. Every new person started from scratch, starting the conversation over every time is so time-consuming. Mm-hmm. So I think I suggested, hey, what would you think if I could collate your materials, put them in sequence, and, you know, we'll make a journal out of it? And I realized people don't really read much anymore, right?
Not anymore. No.
But people do love to work through pictures. And boy, has this guy got pictures. I mean, Jeff, 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we're not talking about little blurry white dots, which everybody seems to get so excited about. We're talking about such details that in the beginning when he, you know, I talked him into it, yeah, let's do this, he got excited. I was thinking to myself, I hope I can come up with enough and just give this man something, because I felt like he really gave me something to prove to me that I wasn't losing my crackers. This is really there. It felt like such a gift to mm-hmm. have that paradigm shift. And in my life, I thought I was so, such a chiseled veteran, and I knew it all. And so I thought, well, I hope I can do this, you know. And he started from the beginning, and I got to rewrite his story with images. And then the historic figures that came into this guy's life, he didn't contact them. They contacted him. You remember, like, 7-8 years ago, he was supposed to come and see you, but he got kind of sidetracked by going to the home of John Weir.
Who was supposed to come and see me?
Well, I thought that if I understood it right, part of the story was when he came to America.
Oh, John Walson. Yes. Yeah. Yes. No, I think that's correct. I'd have to look back, but I think you're right.
John Weir invited him. John Weir.
Yeah.
From Europe to come out and ask him to build a telescope for him. And John Walson's going to tell the story so much better, but this is all in the book. Now, you know, I'm hoping I could come up with something that at least he'll be happy with. He'll have a memento for himself, okay? By the time I think I spent 100 days, over 600 hours, I worked full-time job and come home and slept 4 hours a day, and I just did this for over 100 days. And a good period of the time was spent on breaking down these images and reconstructing the true detail, which I have sent you some of this. I don't want to give away all the punchlines, but now we're able to make comparisons. You know, he would get repeatedly the same configurations, the same craft from different angles and different, you know, portions of the sky. And now you can compare them and start to get real detail and real function out of these things, right? But so John Weir asked him to come out to his house and spend a week. You know, right. John Weir that hangs out with Buzz Aldrin and the top of the top.
We have about seven minutes, John, just so you know. About 7 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay, and another time he was contacted by some minor, you know, celebrity named J.K. Rowling to come to her house, to her mansion.
Oh, J.K. Rowling, the writer Harry Potter. Rowling. Yeah.
And he tells me these things, and I'm like, okay, you know. A lot of these things I was a little skeptical, but by the end of this adventure, this journey, he has proven every single assertion, every single comment. The incident with, you know, the helicopter going over his house and shining the light on him.
I posted pictures of that. I remember. He sent me the freeze frame of it. It was a big helicopter, a Huey. Not a Huey. The hell was it? Yes, it was a the big twin rotor helicopter,
I think it's the Chinook.
It was either an early Chinook or but think of a Chinook and you got it. That's good. Good.
This big, monstrous, thunderous machine comes over his house, shines a light on him while he's taking a video, and at the same time, his closed-circuit television system is videotaping that incident.
Yes.
And now he's got it from a couple different angles, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And, helicopters flew over your house, but he takes a video wherever he goes.
He told me the whole story. We went through it all. It's in the archives, and it was fascinating, and I'll never forget that.
Incident after celebrity after, by the time I was getting near the end of this, honestly, Jeff, I think I'm an old tough bird, right? I'm outside in the middle of the night freaking out, smoking my cigar in fear from what I just saw. But at the same time, making this a family-friendly, you know, picture book that people can almost have on, you know, their coffee table. The first idea is this is just some crazy old, you know, guy taking pictures, whatever, what does he know, you know? And then we take it way up to the next level where we can describe configuration, function, attitude, altitude. I mean, all these things are in the book. The code has been broken, sir. Anybody can do this for themselves if they follow it. There's absolute proof. And as we're showing all this human intervention and all this machinery, because I assert that our technology is hundreds of years ahead of what they share with us right now.
Yeah.
What they have, we expect to have what we have right now in the year 2400 or something. Energy.
And I don't think you're
medicine,
off at all
technology.
On this. That's a whole different paradigm of life and technology. We're given the scraps. We're held way, way behind.
I thought these things were far away and rare, but, you know, that is not the truth. They're prevalent. They're constant. By the time I was done with doing this book, Jeff, all of a sudden it wasn't just the humans. There was other things coming in, too. And it's been proven to me. This guy has close-up pictures of things that he didn't even know he had on his film. And I had to point it out to him. The world, we know it, has been broken. I mean,
Correct. No, and it'll never become common knowledge. It just won't. We can talk about it all day here, but they've got control of the tech, and they're playing with our species, Homo sapiens, like we're expendable, and that seems to be what they're doing right now with this COVID vax crap and all the. These are bioweapons, for God's sakes. Everybody who studies it knows. And, you know, you say one thing about John. He is so humble and such a nice human being that you kind of, with such momentous evidence of technology, that it's so incongruous you kind of can't accept it. It's difficult for some people. He's just a great guy.
Some people are going to fight it. To me, he reminded me at first of almost like, I don't know, when you're in high school, did you ever have shop? Did you ever take wood shop or metal shop?
Yes.
And you always had that cut-up shop teacher, and he'd be missing a couple fingers, and he'd make a joke out of it, right?
Yeah.
If you hang around with John Walson, I got to spend over 100 days with him. He will make you laugh to the point where you feel like this is a true, you know, comedian, but... he's actually, in my opinion, he's broken the code. Everything changed for me, and the information within that book, if people look at it, by the time I finished, I knew things and saw things that I never thought I would see in my lifetime. And it's not a coordinate. Yeah. It's not a secret. It's not hiding somewhere. And he shows you how. Fast, far above space and time. This book on Amazon, and it's a good price. It's pretty cheap. It's beautifully laid out with the pictures and the diagrams. And I mean, and it's just level one. He's several layers above what anybody will know. His true story would just make the most ardent believer question, but this would be a truly
stunning major motion picture. It won't be made, but what a story. And we'll have him, John will be with us tomorrow night, and I'm really looking forward to that.
And I hope I've softened up the ground for him. I hope I've said things about him that he won't for himself, but I mean, this man is a historical figure. I truly believe it'll be shown, and his truth will be proven someday within our lifetimes.
Well, I concur. John, thank you. Wonderful presentation. I'm sure.
I miss you, sir. You just seem like an old friend, and I hope I get to talk to you some more. Thank you so much. And
we will. We will, John.
I couldn't say enough about you. I will have that book to you as soon as I can. Have your producer give me a good address or something, okay? Or send me an email.
I'll send you one.
This hour went way too fast. I could talk for 3 hours to scratch the surface.
We'll have you back, and we'll do some more research into the truth of what's going on around here. Thank you again, John.
Thank you very much, sir. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Good night. Mr. John Wilkie, and if you, again, look and guess under his name, take a look at the images. Take a look at the little video. It's a one-minute video. Order the book. You'll love it. I've seen it. I just don't have it yet. And it's great. So tomorrow night, John Walson will be with us, and I look forward to that for a number of reasons. We'll be right back. Hold on.